Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Okay, I think that means we've started.
I think it does.
Back for another episode of Peak Speak.
In person.
In person. It's always good to see you in real life.
It is. It is. I feel like we see each other more often now than we ever have before.
It's a good excuse.
Fucking oath. So we're at day one, GPC Nationals 2019.
Absolutely.
And we're in your Airbnb that appears to have ghosts in the plumbing.
Yes. In Adelaide. Adelaide has ghosts.
It's not a huge surprise. I'd want to haunt the shit out of Adelaide if I lived here and died.
It's the ghost of all the bench presses that have passed away.
That's a 2012 powerlifting joke really, if I've ever heard.
Yeah, are you really an old school, a mid school powerlifter if you don't make fun of
Adelaide and bench presses? Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Here we are, though.
Yes.
How many have you been to GPC Nationals every year from the start?
I believe so.
This is the seventh one, and I've been to all seven.
I'm pretty sure I've been to all seven. Because I think I've missed a Pro Roar or two. I don't think I've missed a GPC Nationals.
Yeah, yeah.
I drove to Queensland for the first one in my VW Golf from Canberra.
All the way to the Sunshine Coast.
It was an impressive drive. And then we backed out of a gutter and ripped the front bumper off the car. That was fun.
It's pretty cool to see how far the competition has come.
Like, fucking oath, man.
First comp, I think, had 82 lifters.
Yeah, it would have been something like that. And it was 2 days.
And all divisions. Masters, yes.
Everyone. And there was no qualifying. There was none of that. You just had to have competed in GPC prior to that.
Yep. Yeah, I did GPC States 2012 before Nationals, and I almost cried when I left that competition because I thought I couldn't do Nationals because I bombed on bench, but they let me compete. So I'm really happy about that, or I was.
Pity entry if I ever did see one.
So it kind of started to peak in 2015. Well, not peak, but blew up by 2015. I think there were 300 or 400
competitors. Yeah, it was like 360 or something over 5 days. Yeah. That's when it got ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Because it went Tuesday to Sunday.
Yeah, stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not IPF Worlds, which is running at the moment and has run for like 14 days straight.
Far out.
Because they're doing like juniors, then masters, then opens.
And there's a quip there as well, right?
No, I think it's just the open, the classic raw.
They did equipped bench only not so long ago.
Yes, but bench only no one cares about. So.
True.
Especially not Adelaideans.
And then 2016 split up. So they had the masters, juniors, equipped, and single lift separate. And now here we are a couple of years later in Adelaide.
Yes.
And the comp's actually been fucking huge today.
Yeah, man. It's been running really well. I've sort of ducked in and out. I don't have any lifters on until Sunday, so
yeah,
making the most of not having to be in a powerlifting meet 3 days straight.
Yeah,
because that's a bit oppressive sometimes.
Hats off to Fuzzy and the crew for a great meet. He didn't sleep last night, and
I saw him post this morning on Facebook at like 4 o'clock in the morning. That was like when I got up.
It's that to update. Come here. We're still here, so soldier on. Hopefully, he gets a good sleep tonight.
Yeah, fucking earth. More power to him. I was talking to Marcus this morning and I think the scale of a meet like this catches a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, of course.
I've never had to run a powerlifting meet outside of my own gym. So I think that's a pretty big task when you think about it. You got to move all your equipment, and like Fuzzy's had to borrow a bunch of equipment from PTC HQ, so they've got enough warm-up room stuff, and it's just all a very epic sort of epic setup before you've even started 3 days of running a comp.
Yeah. I've only done it once, as in me as the meat director. I guess you could count Oceania as a little bit, but I, you know, we all know what happened there. I ran.
Do we, or was that the bit that we cut out of the episode?
Probably. Doesn't matter. I ran 2016, the first Junior Masters
yes.
Nationals, and that was, it's such a fuck around.
Yeah, dude.
So shit. I never get angry at anyone. Like, it's really hard to see me angry. And when we were unpacking that, I'd parked in the loading zone with a truck. We were loading up the truck, and some smart ass fucking ticket inspectors gave me a $300 fine while we were loading the truck, being like, you can't have your truck here. I'm like, I'm in a loading dock. I can't remember what it was. I chased after them and I yelled at them and I couldn't do anything about it.
Is that because you were waddling too slow and you couldn't catch up with them?
Probably.
Or was that slim, svelte Thomas?
I'm always slim and svelte, let's be honest. So we were just talking off air about...
That just sounds so professional. And it's definitely not because we spent the last 45 minutes working out this fucking audio setup and figuring out a topic to talk about.
We were just talking off air about finding somewhere to train while we were down here. And you mentioned, this gym looks pretty cool. And, that brought up the topic we're going to talk about. And just saying that out loud, thinking about it now, is kind of like... It brings some memories to me of the gyms that I've trained at over the years.
Yeah, man.
And I'm not one of these people that hates commercial gyms.
No, like,
I really enjoy.
I think they serve a purpose, and that's the thing that that people sometimes. I think powerlifters in Australia now are incredibly spoiled. Not just in Australia, but on a world stage, there are very few places in the world where you'll have a gym like yours or a gym like mine that is really at its core a powerlifting and strength sports focused gym. Mm-hmm. Very few of those seem to be commercially viable anywhere else in the world.
Mm.
I've had so many people come and just say, man, I wish there were gyms like this at home.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that the fact that we are a little bit spoiled like that actually leads to this kind of elitist attitude to other gyms, to commercial gyms, to things like that. I mean, I've trained in some very, very well-equipped commercial gyms, and there's nothing wrong with them inherently. Maybe there's something wrong with the people that are in them, but that's not necessarily the fault of the gym. That's more a reflection of the person.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, we both run our gyms as they are, and looking back from their beginnings. And I can't help to think every time I see someone open a gym like this and it's not quite well equipped yet, how are you going to make it? Because the evolution of commercial gyms in the last 5 years has stemmed more towards them being like, wow, people are capitalizing on this idea that we don't have some specialty equipment. Now it seems like any big commercial gym has rigs, has functional training areas. And the World Gym around the corner from my house has a Texas deadlift bar.
Yeah. Like,
as a powerlifter, they've got almost a lot of the World Gyms around the place are getting competition bench presses as well. There's a chain called EMF on the Gold Coast. They're getting comp benches. They're getting, one of them has a powerlifting room. I think they have Monolift. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But they've got the equipment.
Yes.
Which doesn't necessarily turn them into anything relevant to powerlifting, but it makes it a lot easier to access the sport.
Yes.
And it also makes it a lot harder if you're new starting out a gym or a small gym and you don't have the commercial facility there as well. How are you going to compete?
Man, like, that's the barrier to entry for a gym like ours these days. Because guys like you and I have spent the last 5 or 6 years or more developing our gyms from, like, basically empty warehouses with a few squat racks and maybe a deadlift bar. That's certainly what mine was when we started.
Yeah.
And now the barrier to entry for that is so much higher just because we've got a head start.
Not only that, like, if you could open a gym exactly the same as mine 10 minutes down the road, you're opening from nothing. You don't have the culture.
Yes.
And you can't compete with that.
No, exactly. And I also don't think you can rush that.
No.
You know, absolutely. Like, I think developing a gym culture, and I think it becomes such a huge reflection of the person at the helm of said gym, right? Like, my gym culture is a reflection of who I am and my values and how I sell those values as part of the community and how I work towards improving that community over time and all of those sort of things. And so I think if you come from a like maybe you're into the sport and you kind of get involved in it, you're a little bit of a coach and you start kind of going down that road, not having a community of people around you already is going to make it really hard to make it viable, especially given the amount of money you're going to have to put up front to equip your gym in a way that would be at the least an alternative to what is already on offer, as opposed to less than what is already on offer.
Yeah. And I mean, you can see what happens when you don't have that. I mean, so many gyms have opened up and closed up in the last sort of 3 years that have tried to do this whole niche strength training sort of gym, and it just doesn't work out, because how do you compete with the commercial gym down the road for $10 a week if you don't have something to set you apart, like the people, like the culture, like the community?
Yeah.
I've got a question for you. So just thinking about this in my head as we're talking, I want to ask you, do you think you've had to work hard to develop the culture? And I ask that because I've always told myself that I've worked hard to make the culture in my gym what it is. But in reflection of that just now, I think, I haven't actually worked hard to develop that culture. Like you said, the thing that caught me was you said that it's a reflection of you and your values. And my values are represented in the culture. It's like, I've worked hard to build the gym, absolutely.
Mm.
I've worked hard over the years to make it, but the culture is so organic.
Yes. And that's what I mean, is that I don't think there are shortcuts to that. I've worked hard. I don't know if I would qualify it as saying I've worked hard to build the culture. Mm. I've worked hard on creating a community of people by encouraging people to adhere to a set of values that I believe in. But I wouldn't say I haven't gone and actively sought people that I thought would be a good fit for the gym community or anything like that. What I've done is I have things that I believe a good community should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should be a supportive group of people. I talk regularly about the idea that we don't judge on performance or aesthetics. We judge on character and effort. If you are a good person who's willing to work hard and do the work that is required of you to achieve the goals that you want, then you'll fit in, right? Like, and we have, at our gym, we have everyone from complete beginner, I've never lifted a weight in my life, to elite level competitors in powerlifting, in strongman, those sort of things. So I think I tend to agree with you. I don't think I've worked on the community or the culture of the gym. I think I've worked on improving myself and my belief in myself, my skills as a coach, the product that I offer.
Mm-hmm.
And what that has done is attract a bunch of people that are relatively like-minded, but yet still very much a group of individuals.
Yeah.
We have such an eclectic mix of people that gel really well because we all have these common values. And I think that's the thing that people miss, is that it's I don't think it's something you can develop without having a solid understanding of who you are and what you value. And that's easier said than done.
And I know of people who have tried to force a culture.
Yes.
And it hasn't worked.
And like things like setting weird rules about like the way people train, or like making people be there at certain times and trying to do it like that, I don't think works on a scalable level. Like, I don't think you can scale the Westside Barbell AM PM group model where you've got an AM crew and a PM crew and they hate each other. I don't think you can scale that into a commercially viable business. I think what you can do is offer a product that people enjoy. And I make no, I don't try and hide the fact that we're not a gym for everyone. Mostly because not everyone likes me. I mean, chances are if you are listening to this, maybe you don't hate me. But, or you would hate listening to it. And I'm totally okay with that too. but I think that's what, when I say the culture is a reflection of the person at the top, I think that's really the essence of it, right?
Yeah.
If you don't like me as a person, you're not going to stay in my gym for very long. And I know that because people who don't like me have left. And I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to run a gym for everyone. I'm trying to run a gym for a group of people that I enjoy spending time with, who want to be there. And I think that's what sets us apart, you know, is that I'm okay with people not coming back. I'm okay with people leaving. I'm okay with the no dickheads rule, right? Like I run a very firm no dickheads rule. I've never had to kick anyone out. There are a few people I wouldn't let back. I would suggest that perhaps they should find somewhere that's more appropriate to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't had to kick anyone out because the people that don't fit into the community have self-selected out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the cool thing.
Yes.
Like the community becomes the strongest entity in the gym. And it's like, I tell people all the time, you know, if someone comes in to my gym and wants to be the loner, wants to be like the big tough guy, wants to be intimidating, wants to try and be what they can try and be at their commercial gym, it won't work.
Yes.
We're too small of a community. We're too niche for that to fit in.
And everyone knows each other and everyone knows their backstories. And that's the... So as an example, at one point or at more than one point, I've considered implementing a no headphones rule in the gym.
Yep.
Because I think it dissuades people from the community aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But I also acknowledge that there are some people in my gym, myself included sometimes, who just don't want to talk to people when they train.
Yep.
And maybe that's not every time. Maybe that's only 2 days a week where you've had a shitty day and you just want to come in and put your headphones in and do your thing. And I support that as well. So I think for me, that's an example of allowing the environment to grow organically around the group of people that you have.
Yeah, and you have to. You can't just make it, it's John's way or the highway. And
yeah.
I feel the same. Like I don't like headphones particularly. I've never used headphones while training, ever.
That is horseshit. I saw a video of you squatting the other day in headphones.
That's really funny. Someone put a video and I shared it onto the Zero page.
Yes.
And it's me wrapping my knees and I'm wearing headphones. So one of my members got a new pair of headphones and he put it on the bench. And my thing is when headphones are lying around, like wireless ones, I put them on to listen to what people are listening to and then I take them off straight away. So I put them on and I wrapped one knee and then I took them off and put them down. And in that video, for that split second I had them on, it was captured. And I put it to my story and I'm like, fuck, I don't actually want people to see me doing this.
Yeah.
Because I've never, ever in my life worn headphones while training.
No.
And I can't stand them. Like, I get really... And that's just because I'm the coach and I'm always like, hey, Steve, waving my arms around and this person can't hear me or see me.
Yeah.
Because they've got headphones in. And like, that frustration isn't a reflection of what my members want. What my members want is the freedom to put the headphones on if they've had a shit day and they don't want to talk to
anyone. Exactly, man. And I think that's what a good community is it's a safe space for people to be who they are.
Hmm.
Like not forcing people to conform to your view of what a person should be, but allowing them to express themselves as who they are in a way that they feel comfortable doing it. Like the thing is, as a gym, you're not going to be successful if you don't allow people to be comfortable in your environment.
Hmm.
And I don't think you can force the community aspect on people.
No.
And you can talk about, like, and a lot of people do, they talk about the culture of their gym and how great it is. And yet you see the way the gym sort of grows over time. And often I think the people that talk loudest about the culture of their gym being amazing have a really high turnover.
Okay.
They lose a lot of people really quick. Because the thing is, if your culture and your community are good, you don't really need to talk about it. Because your members talk about it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the amount of people that I get posting things about joining the gym and finding this safe space and having a great time, feeling really at home in a group of people, in a community, I'm not prompting them to do that. I'm not trying to sell it. I mention it to people and I say, look, we have a really great group of people, but that group of people has grown over time and we've had some people come and go. We've had people come back, you know, but we've still got people who've been around for 5 or 6 years now. And I just don't think you can rush that. I think that's the hardest part about building a successful niche gym is developing the community over time. Mm. And that's the thing that will mean, like, you could have $300,000 and set up the perfect mecca of powerlifting, and I reckon it'd fail miserably because, A, you've put so much money behind it that suddenly you're in this position, unless you have a spare few hundred grand in your pocket, you're in this position where you have to make money straight away because otherwise you go bankrupt and you don't have a selling point other than fancy equipment. Because the thing is, I think powerlifting, well, strength sports and niche sports, strength sport athletes, people that like that sort of stuff don't need all the fancy equipment. It's nice to have, but you know, like the power racks that most of our guys squat in every day, I worked it out the other day, like nearly 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Still going strong, still work fine. They do great.
They hold the weight. They do what they're meant to do.
Exactly. They might not look real fancy, but they do the job.
Mm.
And I think that's the thing that people miss when they look externally at a gym like yours or a gym like mine, and they go, oh, okay, cool, they've got all this equipment, we'll just like buy the newer versions of it all, set up a gym and it'll be great. I don't think you can replicate that easily.
No. It's interesting as well with the culture thing, because cultures are so individually unique. Like, I remember coming down to the comp at your gym, and you know, you had all your people there, and you were giving the pre-comp spiel, and you said a few. They weren't inside jokes, but they were John jokes, and like, you know, everyone thought they were hilarious.
Because I'm a funny person.
And I was thinking, that's not that funny. But it's like, clearly, you know, they're your people. That's your community. So,
yes,
you know, they enjoy being together. And, you know, it's a reflection of you and the community that you've been a part of building, or you've built over the years. And it made me think of, like, times where I've had lifters move to another state, or move to another, you know, move to Brisbane or something like that, where they need a new gym. And I'll make suggestions of gyms like yours, or like wherever they may be. Hey, go check out these people. And they'll go to the gym, and like, I can recommend a gym based on what it looks like on Instagram and what I know of the owner and what I know of that gym. But I've had people go to those gyms and be like, I don't really like it. Is there anywhere else I can train? And I think they've actually got a really amazing community. I don't know what the community's like, because I'm not a part of it.
Yes.
But clearly you fit really well into our community, and our community must just be different to that community.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like,
that's cool, yeah, of course.
I think that's the really cool thing about where the gym industry is right now, is that there has been, because all of these...
is that going to take off?
It sounds like it, but I think it'll be okay. I think it's just running...
Okay.
Heavily, because it's processing audio and stuff. So I think because we have so many of these big money commercial gyms now that are equipping themselves with stuff that allows them to compete, in air quotes for those that are listening, with gyms like ours from an equipment standpoint, I think what you'll see, or what we are seeing, is the rise of the community gym, you know, where they don't really have more than like 120 to 150 members. That's kind of where it caps out, because is it Dunbar's number? It's like, there's community research.
It's 100. It's about 100.
Yeah. So I've heard anything from 100 to 150, right? Mm. And that you get these different little communities of people that can get along great with each other. And like, I know, like, I have good friends of mine who own other gyms in Canberra that I don't consider to be any direct competition with us, because they offer a very different product, and B, they're a different community. And ultimately, when it comes to finding a gym that you are going to train at for a long time, you have to find a group of people that you enjoy being around, if you're going down the community gym road.
Yeah.
If you want to train in a big box commercial gym, that they have their own community as well. Perhaps it's not as tightly knit as a community like ours, but that doesn't devalue it as a thing. It's just a different product, right? They offer a different product that is potentially cheaper, perhaps lack a bit of the soul that you get in a place like ours, but they provide in terms of services and things like that. I mean, fuck, Nathan Jones trains at a Club Lime in Canberra. The first Australian franchise to go on the ASX. The company that owns Club Lime, the group of gyms in Canberra and surrounds, has just listed on the ASX as a public traded company.
Really? There you go.
They did that. It was only a couple of weeks ago. So, but that's the thing. I think they, this is where people bash on commercial gyms, but they provide a product that people want. Like, you know, no fucking powerlifting gym's been listed on the ASX as a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
So clearly what they're offering works. And so that's where having a group of people that you enjoy being around makes a difference.
Mm. And I trained at a place called Lifestyle Health Clubs. It was the first commercial gym I joined. Actually, the only commercial gym I've joined. But I switched between two locations. So when I went to the second location, they didn't have squat racks. They had one half rack, those ones.
Yeah.
So I would, they've got like a fixed safety height. And if I tried to squat in the rack, I'd hit the safeties because I was hitting depth, and they're designed for people in commercial gyms who squat high. So I'd walk all the way back past
like 18 steps backwards.
Fucking run a marathon with a bar on my back to do my squats. And after 2 weeks, I got kind of sick of it. So I said to the owner, who used to work the front desk half the time, I was like, hey, is there any possibility of getting a proper like power rack in here? Within 3 days, he had bought one and stuck it in there. Because I told him about the sport and everything. Like, having the support of that was fucking cool. And the community at that commercial gym was actually really cool as well. Like, it was sub-communities because, you know, you had people training all hours of the day. But I met some amazing people there. In fact, that's where Jason Semler is from. Strongest bencher ever in Australia. So it was cool. And having the support of the commercial gym was really cool as well. So commercial gyms aren't all that bad, but... I guess the like-mindedness of our communities is what really sets us apart, not the specialist equipment.
Yeah, man.
Which is interesting when you see these commercial gyms putting in powerlifting equipment. It's like most people don't know what to do with it.
Yes.
Like most people in my gym still don't appreciate the difference between Illico and ABC bars. Because there isn't much of a difference to begin with. But, you know...
Except price.
Yeah, yeah. But... Even the like the calibrated plates, before I had any calibrated plates, you'd have a tree of calibrated plates, maybe one tree of calibrated plates, and all the rest were just cheap Chinese plates. And people who didn't know what calibrated plates were wouldn't give a fuck. They're just like, oh, cool, they're colorful.
Man, in the same vein, when I run powerlifting workshops at Burley, we don't actually use the monos.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to people, look, like, this is a monolift. I'll take you through it. Don't be surprised if you've never seen one of these before, because there's only five of them in Canberra and I have three of them.
Yeah.
And so from that standpoint, like, most of the people that come to my powerlifting workshops are people that train in everyday gyms, in commercial gyms. So I say, look, this is what a monolift is. This is what it looks like. This is how it works. But we're not actually going to use that today, because I actually just want you to train in a... I want to work on the big picture, which is getting you to squat better, bench better, deadlift better. So let's use what you're familiar with, right? And remove the variables so that you can learn the most in that scenario that then you can take away and apply to your everyday training.
Hmm.
And so I think that, especially get it like breaking into the sport, you don't need all the specialist equipment. It's nice to have, but you don't need it.
No.
And that's, like you said, that's the bit these commercial gyms miss. Like, you know, you can have fucking four monos and a full stack of calibrated Alecos, but if you don't have anyone who knows what they're doing, it's not going to do anything. It's just you're going to have a lot of money sitting in a corner gathering dust.
Man, I presented a workshop in a place called Toowoomba, which is like 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours out of Brisbane, just a country town on the range. And they had an Aleco rack, an Aleco combo rack in the corner of their gym, and a few calibrated plates, one Aleco bar. But I was going through the thing and it was a workshop for their PTs, and two of their PTs were big dudes that had busted shoulders and couldn't get into low bar in a regular power rack. I'm like, let's just go use the Aleco. They're like, what do you mean? Like, you know, the racks come in, right? And they're like, wait, what? And half of them didn't even know the bench came out. So I unscrewed the bench and took it out, and half the PTs were mind blown. And then I put the racks and they're like, whoa.
Dude, I have people in my gym that don't realize that. I've had people like set up in the combo and have it so high that they're using the bench hooks as squat racks.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, there's two hooks. Now, like, what do you mean? Point at them and they're like, oh.
Mind blown.
Yeah, dude. And that's the thing is, for an everyday person who hasn't, like, you know, for lack of a better term, who hasn't grown up around this. Yeah. And fuck, man, like, I've been in this sport now for 10 years.
Yeah.
I am a totally different human to who I was when I started in this sport. And yeah. I genuinely think it's been a huge part of me growing up as a person.
For sure.
But I'm spoiled. I have three monos to train on, and I still train in power racks because they feel nicer. I like a bar that whips a little bit, makes me feel manly.
It just gives you bounce out of the hole.
Yeah, well, I like to squat fast because I'm all about efficiency, Toss.
That's right. Get it done quickly.
Exactly.
The quicker you get it done, the more beers you can have.
Exactly. The quicker you get in and out of the hole, the less people realize you're actually squatting high. It's all about the illusion of depth.
That's right.
You don't actually have to.
Remember when that depth privilege bullshit went around for ages?
Fuck, I love that.
It's like the original meme.
That cracked me up. I'm all about all squats are beautiful.
All right. I think we're going to wrap this one up.
Yeah, I think
we've got a very special guest to bring on board.
Are we going to release it before this just to fuck with people?
I don't know.
I don't even know what happens. That's Sam's job. Media team, assemble.
All right, peeps.
Give us some reviews. tell your friends, etc.